Today is December 10th, 2014, and this is episode number 284 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. And I'm addicted to diction. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
There are so many things that I simply cannot say right now.
There's definitely a little bit of history and baggage in today's Brian title. But before we change our demographic.
And boy, howdy, would we.
Before we do that, I should mention in that, you know, that episode did resonate with folks.
What's that sound, Brian?
That would be the sound of my Steam Workshop steampunk Zippo.
So not only are you spokesman, you're also a client.
I apparently, yes, it's true. You know, the funny thing is that Mr. Culligan sold out of stuff almost pretty quickly, actually. And that's funny. He apparently added something new to sell today, and it sold already. Anyway, he's been selling stuff like hotcakes, but I know he's working on restocking if you're wanting to get something in time for Christmas.
My assumption is that all these things sold out so quickly because our listeners totally flipped and couldn't hand over their money fast enough.
Our listeners did. They very much enjoyed the conversation. They very much enjoyed. Our readers enjoyed the article. We got, I think I've gotten more feedback personally on that particular episode than any other episode that we've done. And I know that our readers and listeners bought stuff and contacted Mr. Culligan and have done business with him. So I'm delighted. First of all, I'm delighted that we talked about something that resonated with people so much, that people liked there's just a lot of interest in the steampunk stuff out there. But I'm even more delighted that we were able to bring some exposure to an artist as talented as Mr. Culligan.
Yeah, that's very cool. And your lighter looks really awesome.
It is. I'll probably post a picture to Instagram in the next couple of days.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah, I want to get the lighting right, and I want it to look good. So anyway,
so what do you want to talk about?
I don't know. We have three topics. That's assuming we can get to all three of them. So pick one.
Oh, see, I have the list, but it's in a different window, and I have to go back and look.
One, two, or three?
Let's start at the top with one.
All right. Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh,
might have heard of him.
Yeah.
He's the head honcho at a little outfit called Facebook.
Never heard of it. Must be thinking of someone else.
He's rather young, rather rich, rather successful.
I think and that's a good
I would
way
add to that
him.
Rather lucky.
Yeah, I think that there's probably a healthy dollop of luck mixed in with his life.
Yeah. Well, with most people who are super successful, there's a little bit of, you know, serendipity involved at the very least. But he disappointed me.
How
he
so?
He disappointed
Brian?
Me this week. He did an interview with Time Magazine. So Lev Grossman, an old school, excellent journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent journalist. And he's a great writer too, quite frankly. He had a we'll get to that line because we both like that line. We'll mention that when we actually have some context.
I know exactly which line. Yeah.
So the story is about Mark Zuckerberg and about Facebook and whatnot. And but part of it involved a shot at Tim Cook from Mr. Zuckerberg. kind of a shot at Apple, I suppose, but really it's kind of a shot at Tim Cook. Because Tim Cook, you know, we talked a little bit about this. Apple appears to be interested in making privacy a competitive advantage.
Right. That's not what Facebook's doing, though.
It's not really what Facebook is doing. And Apple's doing it two ways. One, of course, they've got this thing in iOS 8 where they say that they don't have the key to unencrypt your iOS device so that they couldn't even honor a government warrant if they got one.
And
right?
That's so, something I really like. Like, seriously, I'm glad that they can't do that.
Yes, and not necessarily because of the government, because that means that no one else can get to it either.
Yes,
that's why I'm so keen on that. It's I don't have anything personal to hide from the government. I'm not worried about that. I am worried about it in the abstract, in that I believe that as we've discussed before, the government's kind of lost sight of the difference between what it can do and what it should do. And we've talked about the fact that there should be a constant tension between between the government and the press and private individuals and and business, and that right now, recently in the last, certainly since 9/11, the government has been straying too far, and we need to push back.
Yes, we do.
Right.
Yes.
So we talked about that, but then there's also the business versus business privacy, where we're talking, of course, about Google, Facebook, to a lesser extent, Yahoo, any of the many and sundry services out there that operate on an advertising paid for basis.
Right. Yeah, and these are services where the line that's come up more than once, if you're not paying for the service, you're the product.
Yeah, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product.
There we go, yeah.
And Tim Cook was not the first person to say that. I don't know who was the first person to say that, but it certainly wasn't Tim Cook, at least not publicly. And in a statement where Apple was outlining its privacy policy, Tim Cook was quoted as saying, when an online service is free, you're not the customer, you're the product. And Tim Cook has also spoken about this a few times in the last, I don't know, 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, Apple appears to be willing to make that more of a deal. And here's the great line from Lev Grossman. He wrote, when Tim Cook said, when an online service is free, you're not the customer, you're the product, Lev Grossman wrote, the shot was probably meant for Google, but Facebook was definitely in the blast radius.
I love that line.
It is a genius line. Man, when I grow up, I want to be at least half as good as Lev Grossman.
Yeah, me too. I'm not planning on growing up, but if I
did... Yeah, me neither, so I'm not really worried about having to meet that standard or anything.
Yeah. Boy, we got off on a technicality there.
Whew, that was close. So when Mr. Grossman was talking to Mark Zuckerberg about this, Mr. Zuckerberg said, quote, a frustration I have is that a lot of people increasingly seem to equate an advertising business model with somehow being out of alignment with your customers. I think it's the most ridiculous concept. What? You think because you're paying Apple that you're somehow in alignment with them? If you were in alignment with them, then they'd make their products a lot cheaper! Exclamation point. End quote.
I think he's missing a key component in his logic train right there.
Yeah, it's... So, you know, I spoke with John Martellaro about this. And John ended up taking a different line than me. He wrote an excellent piece suggesting that that Mr. Zuckerberg is living the wrong life. And John, I love John's thoughts. It was a really interesting piece. We'll have a link to the show notes, eh?
Of course we will. That's how we roll.
That is how we roll. And, well, you know, I say that because you're the one who actually puts the show notes together.
So, more accurately, that's how I roll.
All right, yeah, fair enough. Sold. But my take on this was a little more direct, and that Mr. Zuckerberg is either just like missing the point or willfully misconstruing the point in a ham-fisted effort to spin it. It's one of the two. Because if you were in alignment with them, i.e. Apple, then they, meaning Apple, would make their products a lot cheaper, is just factually just wrong. Because Apple's entire point is, because we charge enough money to make a profit, we don't have to make you the product.
Right, which is not the same thing as, because you gave us money, we should charge you less for a product. Which is yes. Kind of what Zuckerberg is saying.
Kind of. And I mean, okay, just to be completely fair about this, because we've talked a lot about advertising and privacy and selling us and you know, making us the product, and you know, with Facebook, where that company really makes me tense is that they constantly look for new ways to change the rules midstream, and they constantly do change the rules midstream, and they find new ways to screw with our privacy, and they find new ways to sell us, and they always roll it into these forced click permission slips to do it, and they constantly push this envelope on how to screw us, the users. And that's where Tim Cook is talking about. I mean, I don't know where the alignment thing came from. I don't think that was from Tim Cook. But that's what Tim Cook is talking about.
Sure. And yeah, if see, now I'm just getting all upset about Facebook screwing over our privacy and I can't form complete sentences. Thanks, Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, thanks, Obama. Wait, what?
No, it's frustrating if Mark is saying these things and he really truly believes that this is how it is, because that means that he's really not equating our privacy with something that's anything other than a commodity to be sold.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the case. And that was where I had originally meant to try to be fair about this. And that is to acknowledge the reality that for many people, getting a great service in exchange for their privacy is an A-OK trade-off. And from the company's standpoint, being able to offer a great service and having advertisers finance it is a win-win situation from their standpoint. They win, the advertisers win, and consumers win because they're getting this great product. And there is also the train of thought that I am not entirely opposed to that says that targeted advertising is actually beneficial to we, the user, because we're being shown stuff that we're actually interested in.
See, targeted advertising, it's a very fine line, and it's so easy to cross over into the bad side. But targeted advertising done well and done appropriately can actually be a good service.
Absolutely.
I just don't feel like I'm getting that on Facebook.
No. And, well, probably you are, though. I mean, Facebook right now is number two. You know, Google is the king of this stuff.
Oh, yes.
Google is the king of selling advertising based on us. But Facebook is a not too distant second. And Facebook is pulling in information from a lot of different places thanks to Facebook Connect. And Facebook also definitely knows a lot about us, and it know everything that it knows about us from the way we interact with Facebook itself is in fact extremely valuable. You know, it was Eric Schmidt quipped that that Google knew what we were thinking before we did,
and he was only partly joking.
Yeah, and that's not a word for word quote, but it's pretty close. It's certainly a very close paraphrase. I would imagine that Facebook isn't that far behind. Definitely, I think Google is still the king of it. But, you know, for one thing, they've been at it longer. Mm-hmm. For another thing, I think Google has access to more and better data at this point. That's a guess, by the way.
I know,
shooting from the hip.
At least for me, Google has more and better data than Facebook. Which is probably part of the reason why I look at the ads I see in Facebook and think that you guys really aren't getting who I am. But then again, I'm using Facebook in a very limited way. Basically, what happens is my tweets get pushed over to Facebook.
Yeah, likewise, actually. That's that. I only personally, I am on Facebook. I limit it to people that I know. People that are friends or family, or people that I that I knew in high school, and I tend to only go there when directed for some specific reason. Likewise, all my tweets that aren't at replies get turned into a Facebook post.
I've been trying to not laugh because I find it incredibly funny that you categorize the people in your life as friends, family, people I knew in high school.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah.
It's wonderfully funny.
What am I trying to say here?
What you're trying to do is make sure that those two friends that you had in high school that actually are listening right now know that that they are your friends and that you're not a jerk.
No. The thing is that here's the way I feel about people. Once I'm your friend, I'm always your friend, and I really don't care how much time elapses, and I am interested. I am genuinely interested in people that I may not have actually thought about in 20 years, but when I do think about them, I am genuinely interested.
So you don't have a shelf life on friendships?
I really don't.
That's
I have
cool.
A lot of friends that I have, just been able to pick up, you know, like, I mean, we may not speak to each other for 2 or 3 years. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we're just picking up right where we left off. And you know, and we'll just go through a cycle like that. And then there's all kinds of people from high school that I have not kept up with, but that I always found interesting and that I always liked those people. And if I had the time, I would be much closer friends with a lot of people.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah, so that's the backdrop.
The categorizing, the way you laid everything out, I thought it was really mm-hmm. funny.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Anyway, Facebook. For some of us, perhaps Facebook doesn't have great information. But for people who do use Facebook on an active basis, they have excellent data. They know what's being clicked on. They know what's being read. I would imagine they know how long any given post stays on someone's screen.
Probably.
Sure, they're tracking that sort of thing.
Right, and like you said, with Facebook Connect, they can collect data about you from other services that you're using.
Yeah, just like Google does.
See, this is why one of the reasons why I don't use Facebook Connect.
I do not use Facebook Connect. I will not use Facebook Connect. I don't even like using. I'm a little more willing to use Twitter Connect.
I don't. If a service requires me to connect via Facebook or Twitter, I don't use the service.
No, I won't either. But if the service is actually going to be tied to Twitter, I will. So, like, if I'm actually registering on a site that where I am okay with my Twitter information being used, or because it's going to either get information from Twitter or put information on Twitter, I'll do it. Haven't been many of those, mind you. Anyway, we're digressing.
Sure, but it's fun.
Admittedly, that's what we do.
Our podcasts are like a roller coaster where you can't see where the track is going.
And it's true.
And we are along for the ride, just like all of our listeners.
It's true. It's true. So back to Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, right. Right. I forgot we're talking about Facebook today. Yes.
I know that Google legitimately feels like it's providing a tremendous value for what they're doing. And I actually, you know, I think part of my problem with Facebook is that I think that everybody at Facebook just thinks of us as a mark. That's interesting. I had not realized it. I do not think that about Google. I don't think that Google thinks of us as a mark.
Now, for people that don't know what you mean, what exactly are you getting at when you say we are a mark?
Well, a mark is a term used by con artists, mm-hmm. or by, thieves?
Sure, we'll call them thieves. And anyhow, so the mark, it's the person that the con artist is targeting for whatever it is that they want to profit from themselves. So, and in many cases, the mark is someone that they plan on duping, like just very clearly duping into giving something up, handing something over, and there you go. So I think it's a very apt way of describing what we are to Facebook.
Yeah, a mark in general is someone who has been marked as being a dupe, someone who has been marked as being the person that can be fooled. It's the person who has been marked by the bad guy, or, you know, depending on your perspective, whatever. Anyway, it's the person who's been marked by the bad guy.
We'll go with bad guy. I like that.
As someone that can be used and manipulated and fooled or whatever for the purposes of whatever hijinks they're about to get up to.
So in the case of Facebook, we are easy targets for personal information that can be sold to advertisers.
Yeah, I think so. I don't have any proof of that for sure. This has just been a gut feeling that's been playing in my subconscious for a long time. And I think part of it is because the team that runs Facebook is so young, they don't have any perspective, and they quite frankly have all been so rich at such a young age that I personally think that that's the sort of thing that can warp most people's perspective.
Yeah, I think you're right. It kind of reminds me of the guy a few years ago that said that he had the perfect system for saving people from identity theft, and he was so certain of it that he put his social security number on the ads.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became a victim of identity theft. And what it came down to was he was so sure of what he was doing and had become arrogant to the point that he felt he was doing no wrong and was able to very easily justify to himself his actions. And he just didn't have the experience. And yeah, he got burned. I think that Facebook, to a degree, is in that position as well.
The data point we have to support that is the way Facebook has constantly changed the rules. Changed the rules about what they can do with our data. What the goodness gracious, that disgusting event where they played psychological experiments on hundreds of thousands of their users.
That was horrible.
I'm still so incredibly offended by that. I think that they consider us marks, whether or not they realize it. I think subconsciously they consider us marks, and I've never gotten that impression from Google. I have little doubt that Eric Schmidt is confident that we're not smart enough to understand what they're doing, But that's a much different than actually thinking of us as marks.
True. And at least with Google, there are instances where we are getting something of value in return.
Almost everything. The Google search engine, a wonderful search engine. Google Mail, a fantastic mail service. Google Now on Android is the premium mobile app on the planet. It's nowhere near as good on iOS. Not because they're doing that. They would love to have it be as good on iOS, but Apple won't let them. And that's fine, because I don't think I'm willing to give up enough to make Google Now beneficial to me. But, you know, you can go on. Most of Google services are excellent services.
Sure, they are. The downside, though, is that Google sees all their services as very transient. So we get a service we love, and the assumption is that at some point it's just going away.
Yes, that's true. Google Mail, Gmail is probably not going away. Google Chat's probably not going away. Google Search Engine, not going away.
Okay, fair enough. But other services that have seemed to be core, they have all gone away. And that really sucks. So unfortunately for me, I look at Google and I see services that I want to get excited about, but I have to restrain myself because my assumption is that Google giveth, Google taketh away.
Yeah, at least Google could.
Sure. Often enough that I'm leery. With Facebook, though, I don't see the overall value. I mean, yes, there's the kind of intangible value of having connections with people that you otherwise may not be able to reconnect with, and that's yes, that's a very cool thing.
Yeah, Google, Facebook brings something to the I mean, we use Facebook. People use Facebook. Well, maybe not you and me so much, but there are hundreds
people
of
use
millions
Facebook.
Of people.
We're not who, people. We're podcasters.
Who, yeah, fair enough. Ha ha. But hundreds of millions of people use Facebook on a daily basis. I mean, you know, there's something there for sure. I just feel like, but you know, back to this out of alignment thing. You know, it's just, I'm not sure where Mr. Zuckerberg got the alignment thing, but I will give an alignment accusation. To Facebook, looking at the way Facebook separated chat to its own app, because that was better for Facebook.
Yes,
customers didn't want that.
Yeah, I don't think most customers were happy with that being split out. How about Facebook Paper? That do you even remember Facebook Paper?
No.
Well, there you go. So Facebook Paper was a new interface, essentially, that Facebook created for viewing their content. So it was more like Flipboard, that sort of thing. So it presented all of your content more like a newspaper or a magazine. And it did look nice, but it gave Facebook total control over how you looked at the content in your Facebook.
Facebook
feed.
Has total control over our feed as it is. I mean,
Right now we have a little bit of control. Well, we have a couple options in how we look at our content in the Facebook feed, but you don't have that in Facebook Paper. Hmm. It's just here's how we present it to you. There you go.
Is it still around?
I think so, but I'm not certain. It's not installed on any of my devices.
Yeah. So here's another thing. Clearly these comments are resonating in a negative way, but resonating with me, this comment from him, what you think you're paying Apple and you're somehow in alignment with them. The difference with,
do you think Mark is looking at companies and customers as if they're teams, and almost like a binary thing? You're either with the team or you're not.
Maybe. I don't know. I never really thought of that.
That just kind of came to me.
I think they see us as people and things to use, you know. And I know I tweeted this. I don't think we mentioned it on this podcast, but I wish if I could pay, I would pay Facebook $20 a year to use the service ad free and without having my data collected.
That would be awesome. It's not worth it to them because you're worth a lot more than that $20.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, the average Facebook user is worth more than that, more than $20 a year to them, I think.
I don't know. $20 billion a year in revenue? What are they doing in revenue?
Lots. I don't know.
Facebook annual revenue. We have that little Google thing.
Hey, look.
$5 billion in sales this year. Yeah. $20 billion, a lot more than what they're bringing in.
All right. Well, I sit corrected.
That we'll see what year is this. Make sure this is something semi-recent because their ad sales have certainly increased this year. Oh, that was in 2012. Nonetheless, it would be close. I'd pay Google $100 a year without even thinking about it.
Oh yeah.
I would actively use Gmail as opposed to like our Mac Observer mail is handled through Google's API, which is again an excellent service that they offer. But I would actually probably just sign up for a Gmail account alone. If I could use Google services without being tracked. And without being part of their advertising machine, and if I could get Google services without ads, I would pay $100 without $100 a year without even thinking about it. And there's no way Google's making $100 a year on me with ads. No way.
I'm sure you're right, but by letting people opt out of that, I think that that would really mess up their magical algorithms for figuring out so well how to present information to us. I think that, of course, keep in mind, I have no one inside Google telling me this, but I think that they're using a lot of the search activity that's happening on Google just as an aggregate to be able to figure out overall trends and search patterns that they can then use to better refine search results for individual users.
Oh yeah, that's true. And actually I wouldn't mind my data being used to make Google search better. I'm actually okay with that. That benefits me.
I'll throw the caveat of...
I just don't want to be sold.
It needs to be anonymously used.
Yeah. Fair enough. But I'd definitely pay $100 a year. And I'd pay... Facebook is probably worth $20 a year, and that's just... no more. Wouldn't pay 30.
You know, I'd probably be more inclined to use Facebook on a regular basis if I could pay them to not use me as the product.
Correct. I would too. Of course, at that point, they have a disincentive for us actually using stuff if we're paying for it.
That's true.
Right. At that point, every page view actually becomes a resource to be paid for versus a resource to be harvested.
That's a good point. And that does not fit with their business model at all.
Well, currently it doesn't, but they would still make more money. And so at that point, their incentive comes to make Facebook compelling enough to have me not only continue paying for it, but to have other people pay for it too. I'd be shocked if Facebook, let's say they have 1 billion users, if 1 billion people, and I realize that 1 billion people probably wouldn't all do it, but we're just going to make this a, you know, just for the sake of argument.
Sure.
I doubt Facebook could bring in $20 billion in revenue. Of course, I really should make sure that that's
Now let's make up numbers and call them fact.
That's what we do the rest of the time. second quarter Facebook earnings. Oh, there's the 10Q. Come on, just give me this information, folks.
Yeah, come on, Google. Don't let us down.
Top line, current assets.
Making the sausage right here live on the show.
Yes, right here. Oh, they're not making this easy to see here. Marketable, accounts receivable, prepaid, property. Why are you making this so hard for me to see?
ACM, the musical.
Yes, income from operations, 1.5. Total good. What?
By the way, the musical version of our show is opening off Broadway soon. And when I say off Broadway, I mean off Broadway.
Oh, revenue. There we go. 2.9 billion in 3 months ending in June 2013. This compares to 1.8 billion in the year ago quarter, in the June quarter of 2013. Yeah, so 2.9. Yeah, I don't see Facebook ever getting a $20 billion in revenue.
Barring
inflation
not.
In enough time, not within the next 10 years.
Okay. Sure, I'll accept that. I see another incentive for them not to offer us a way to pay or buy ourselves out of being tracked. And it's that Facebook then becomes perceived as a subscription service, and that will turn a lot of people off. I think they would end up losing users who just simply didn't understand how the system worked.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's certainly not an easy question, and of course you and I are sitting here in our office, or in the studio, of course,
right?
But and certainly Mark Zuckerberg and company have in fact made a lot of money, and they're doing some things right from a business perspective. But he's just wrong about this Apple thing, and his comments do not put him in a positive light, because it really kind of makes him look. It doesn't make him look very bright.
No, I want to say out of touch.
Yeah,
ignorant. In the actual definition term, not in a derogatory way.
Yeah. All right, we have gone on a lot longer than we anticipated.
Yeah. Welcome to our show.
I'm thinking we should go to topic number three.
Okay. Which one is number three?
Apple's growth, long term prospects, and R&D facilities around the world.
All right. That sounds awesome. Let's talk about that.
Well, you wrote a story
a couple days ago
about Japan.
Right. And so it's important to understand the distinctions between Apple's R&D facilities. In the United States, they have the R&D centers where they are designing the actual products that we buy. So that brand new iPhone that you purchased was designed in California.
Yep, here in Cupertino. I'm sorry, nearby in Cupertino.
Nearby in Cupertino.
For me.
Right. On a galactic scale, nearby for me too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Then there are R&D centers outside of the United States. And those centers are working on other things that will ultimately lead to that brand new iPhone that you just bought that was designed in Cupertino near Bryan.
Because Apple does not just buy shelves off the parts off the shelf.
Right. And the fact that that you put the words in the wrong order is totally awesome considering your title today.
True enough.
Okay, so these centers, what they do is work on designing individual components that will ultimately go together to make a finished product. They also work on manufacturing processes and the equipment that's needed to make those manufacturing processes happen. And so that there are these big research centers or R&D centers that Apple has built in various countries, and they are getting ready to build one outside of Tokyo.
Yes. And here's what's interesting.
Do tell.
Here's what's interesting about this. So first of all, you know, there was a rumor close to a year ago. Or 6 months ago, one of the two, in March of 2014, there was a rumor that Apple was building a facility in Switzerland so that the Apple Watch, or what we were then thinking was still going to be the iWatch, could be Swiss made. And that part of the rumor is just silly. Apple's not going to market the
Of course it's silly.
The electronic device as being Swiss made.
No, because their products are designed in Cupertino.
Yeah, and not only that, but the Swiss made has value when it comes to mechanical watches. It has little or no value when it comes to quartz or any other kind of digital watch or anything like that. So, you know, it's that part of it was silly, but where there's smoke, there's usually fire. And my personal assumption was that Apple was probably opening up some offices in Switzerland. You know, we know that Apple has its own metallurgists that are making its own proprietary alloys for the Apple Watch.
Yes, that's no secret. Apple made that clear to us when they gave us the unveiling.
And Switzerland has... The Swiss watch industry has a lot of metallurgy. There are a lot of proprietary alloys that are developed, designed, conceived, etc., and used in the, especially the high-end mechanical watch industry. And so, you know, plus there's all kinds of things about miniaturization. There's heuristics. There's ergonomics. There are lots of things about watches where the experts, or at least a lot of experts, are located in Switzerland. So the idea that Apple was going to open up some kind of R&D facility in Switzerland, I'm down with that. I would actually be surprised if Apple didn't do that.
But the notion that they would do that to poach designers from Swiss watchmakers, I'm not buying that.
I mean, maybe designers, probably not though, because I think the design of the watch is going to be happening in Cupertino,
right?
But developing, having engineers, having metallurgists, having chemical engineers. Working on some technology or some way of doing something. I could see some of that being done in Switzerland. Again, I'd be kind of surprised if it wasn't. And now, of course, we have this new component-oriented high-end research facility in Japan. And really, all this made me think about Apple's future. You know, Apple is becoming, you know, they're on their way to being a $700 billion company in value in terms of their market capitalization with a relatively low PE and price to earnings ratio.
Oh, I thought you meant physical education. It's like they sat around a lot.
Right. I think that Apple has lots of growth left in it. I certainly think that Apple has new markets that it's going to enter.
I think that there's a lot of growth potential in Apple as well. I know there are people out there that say, oh, the iPhone, no one's buying it, which is wrong. Oh, the iPad, it's dead, which is also wrong. And they just don't see the growth. But I think that means that they have a rather myopic view about what the company is and what the company does.
And what the company has done.
Yes.
Yeah, there is some kind of ceiling on iPhone sales.
You know, well, there's a ceiling on sales for everything.
Yeah. Yeah, there are only so many people, and for Apple, there are only so many people who can or want to afford their products, or who are even interested in their products. There are only so many people. But I think it likely that Apple is going to continue to enter new markets and continue to grow. And that's part of where these R&D facilities around the world come into play.
Sure.
It's you know, not only working on stuff for current products, but working on stuff for future products. And really, it just kind of boggles the mind.
It does. And to think that that these research centers are working on products and components for devices that we're not even thinking about yet. But of course, Apple, they're several steps ahead of us on what they're doing. So what interesting things are going to be coming out of these centers? And for some reason, the fact that Apple is building a center outside of Tokyo, to me, is very intriguing. And I'm just really curious to see, well, of course, we'll never know what it is that comes out of there, but it'd be really cool to be able to see exactly what it is that they'll be working on and what cool, at the moment, sci-fi thing they're going to be developing.
Yeah, there have been a lot, and you know, Japan has been the source of a lot of display technologies. Mm-hmm. Japan has been the source of a lot of battery-oriented technologies. Certainly, Sony and other Japanese firms have brought a lot to the television industry in the past. You know, there are a lot of highly developed technologies and cuddling that have come out of Japan. Mm-hmm. That are centered in Japan. There are a lot of experts in Japan. So, yeah, it's in that Apple does need to expand. We also know that Apple has been opening R&D facilities. They've got something in Austin. They've got something that they're doing in Taiwan, I think.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
That they had opened up. And, you know, Apple is just becoming this incredibly large company, even though their headcount is still tiny compared to, you know, any other company that's bringing in a significant fraction of what Apple's revenue is.
Microsoft, for example.
Yeah, Microsoft, right. Apple has less than half as many employees as Microsoft. Walmart employs more than 1 million people,
which is just crazy. Can you imagine the spreadsheet for payroll?
Well, wouldn't need to be very big because they don't pay very well. That's a joke. That's an angry joke, actually.
Angry, angry joke.
It's an angry, angry, angry joke at Walmart. And so, yeah. There are more things to come from Apple. It doesn't necessarily mean that there are things that everybody who has heretofore been an Apple fan are necessarily going to be a fan of or enjoy or like. We don't know, but Apple expanding its R&D around the world says that more things are coming. That's just for sure.
And for me, that's exciting because there are so many products Apple has made that I like. I even really like Apple TV, and I know there's a bunch of people that feel like Apple TV is a bad product or is too far behind the competition. But man, I really enjoy Apple TV.
Yeah. I love my TiVo. I wish Apple would do what TiVo does.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, I don't understand why they don't, but that's another question. That's definitely another question for another show.
Still, there are going to be some really cool things coming out of Apple in the future, and these massive facilities or operations that they're running in countries around the world just go to back that up. And it, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that long ago when news articles that referred to Apple also included the word beleaguered,
mm-hmm.
doomed.
Fortunes can rise and fall. It is possible that Apple will stumble in the near future. It's possible.
And yeah, let alone and nothing lasts 20 forever. Years.
Yeah, nothing lasts forever. At some point, some of the key people that have made Apple what we know of Apple as today, those key people will retire or resign or go on to do something else somewhere else. And, and the character of Apple will continue to change. I think that with Apple University and the efforts that Steve Jobs did to institutionalize a culture of innovation, I think that Apple, I believe that those results not only speak for themselves, but will continue to have results. And that Apple can survive these key people, but Apple's character will continue to change just as it changed from the Steve Jobs era to the Tim Cook era. Yeah, Apple is a little bit different.
Of course it's a little bit different. And the company needs to always evolve.
Right.
Because the market changes, economies change.
It must, yes.
Sure. And you're right. Apple is a different company under Tim Cook than it was under Steve Jobs. And in small ways, sure. But I'm liking the changes that Tim has been making.
Yeah. Likewise. Yeah. Although we did just recently talk about some areas that Apple seems to be letting slip through the cracks.
Oh, that's true.
I was just thinking earlier today that Apple needs to give Mail some love, and you were probably thinking the same thing. My thoughts, by the way, independent of your problems that you've had in the last couple of days.
Yeah, and I can't wait until I sort out exactly why I'm having my problems.
Yeah, iCloud still not perfect. iTunes Match not perfect. We talked about iTunes, the fact that I want lossless music.
Sure. How about software updates iTunes. For the iPhone? Yeah, software updates for the iPhone that shut off the phone.
Yeah, those kinds of problems. The crashing to the desktop. So Apple is not perfect. Apple has never been perfect. And Apple is certainly not perfect now. But by and large, the changes that we've seen at Apple have been changes that resonate with, at least with you and me. The being more open, being more environmentally, even more environmentally conscious. The aggressive efforts Apple has made to improve working conditions in the supply chain and improve environmental sustainability within the supply chain. Apple's attempts to be open with government requests for warrants and requests for information. All of these things mm-hmm. have been good. Apple's participation with more charity things, bigger participation with RED. Employee contributions, matching employee contributions, all those things. Civil rights advocacy. Yes. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Apple's participation in the Pride Parade in San Francisco. These are all things that resonate with you and me. Don't resonate with necessarily everyone, but do resonate with you and I and I like seeing those things. Okay, I think the Skype gods are maybe telling us to wrap it up. If anything sounds weird in the previous few minutes, it's because our call kind of went to heck.
In
a big old handbasket. But that's okay, because we were about ready to wrap up. I did want to mention that I posted the first short story that I've published, that I've put out for public consumption. I put that on my blog. It's called Whispers. I put a new category in my blog called Stories.
Fun.
It's technically narrative nonfiction, but I'll just leave it at that.
I enjoyed the piece.
Thank you. It's really short. It's extremely short. It actually would probably qualify as flash fiction.
Still, it's long enough to paint the entire picture.
Ah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. And that you have a new post over at Fresh Brew. Oh, my blog is at geektells.com, geektells.com.
Yes, and you started to say, I have a new post over at Fresh Brew Tales, so freshbrewtales.com. Mm-hmm. And yeah, go check it out. I was standing in line at Starbucks, and I look over, and here's a guy sitting at a table. He has his computer set up. He has his printer set up as well, and he's turned Starbucks, at least his little table, into his whole office.
Yeah, you know, looking at his picture, just to go ahead and judge a book by its cover and to be an incredibly, incredibly jerky person, I kept expecting him to, or when I look at his picture, I expect him to be muttering about his red stapler.
Oh, that's awesome. And
I just watched Office Space a couple days ago. It was on Spike.
That's a brilliant movie. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah. and I have a newfound appreciation for red swing line staplers because of that movie.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, as do a lot of people. All right, so geektells.com and freshbrewtales.com. You can subscribe at both, so you get an email when we make a new post. If you do, we would love that, and thank you kindly, and I think that's time to hit the music.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com, and thanks for listening.
Yes, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.